Today's reading comes from Matthew chapter 12, verses 46 through 50. While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside, seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside, seeking to speak with you." But he answered and said to the one who told him, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother, a sister, and mother." You may be seated.
We had a big day yesterday with giveaway day, and let me express appreciation to you for providing things through your contributions throughout the year. And we were able to serve between 215 and 220 families. We had a big number and come, one of the bigger numbers in several years, and so we're thankful that we were able to serve. And we also had a large number of you come and work, and we appreciate that. We had well over the number that was needed. We had an abundance of help, and that makes it so much easier and better. So thank you so much for that. Also, Larry Knight asked me to add that you can sign the prayer petition or petition to get prayer in school that they are submitting to the state of Kentucky. If you like, those are available at the exits. Loving others best. When I was in Tennessee, there was a lady I would go visit, and her husband had a stroke and was very physically debilitated because of that stroke. And because of that, she had not been able to attend services. And we tried to get her to allow some ladies to come over and sit, or some men to come over and sit with her husband, and so she could attend church. And even her family tried to do that, but she didn't want to do that. She wanted to stay there. And so this went on for years. I think he lived between 2 and 3 years after the initial stroke. And I always feared and felt that she was allowing that to become the priority over Christ. And then after her husband passed, she still remained away from the church. As far as I knew, she did not come back to the church. Loving others best. I've been reading a book called Amish Peace, and in that book, this tells you various ways that Amish families are simplistic. And one of the things is that is interesting is why bicycles had been banned early on. And when the bicycles came, the elders and the things looked at that, and they decided that it was possible, and they feared people would get too far away from home if they had bicycles. They end up adopting scooters later on, and so they have all these colorful scooters around. But the chapter goes on, and it talks about how whenever a new technology or invention comes along, it is weighed or measured before it is adopted on two principles. What effect will it have upon the family, the home, and what effect will it have upon our faith? And therefore, many of the things that we take as a part of our common life, they have rejected because they feel that it will hurt their family and hurt their faith. One of the things about our culture is that we tend to adopt it. Any technology that comes along, we soak it up. And then we later on figure out how it has hurt our faith or our family. There's another story in the book, another quote that I thought was very interesting. And it says this on the chapter dealing with Amish children. "Amish children are loved but not adored. Amish children are loved but not adored. Wanted but not made to feel special. Provided for but not spoiled. Amish children are loved and wanted. They are needed to help with farm work. They are an Amish family's strength, life, and perpetuity. Amish children are not indulged." If you look up the word adored in a dictionary, you'll find that one of the first meanings given for adore is to worship as God or as a God. Now, you have other meanings given for adore, to like very strongly or to admire. But one of the primary meanings is to adore as a God or worship as a God.
Children are loved, but not adored. In our culture, it seems that children are often adored to a high, high degree. So much that many families, and all of our families, in fact, are in some ways are tempted to allow the best interest of the children to often supersede what's best for the family and the parents. One other story, and then we're going to look at some text. I have not read these books, but or seen the movies, so I'm talking a little bit ignorant here, but I'm told in the movie, or in the story of Hunger Games, that it is about a dystopia. It's about, in the future, a time when it is actually worse instead of better. And it's an awfulish, nightmarish world. And there's 12 districts, and there's been a civil war, and then there's a lottery where they draw the names of two teenagers from each of the district, and then these 24 teenagers come together, and they actually fight to the death, and this has to do with which of the districts get food and things. And the story is centered around a young lady named Katniss and her weak, more feeble sister, Prim. And Prim is very nervous about getting put in the lottery as she is her first year to be put in the lottery. And Katniss assures her that it's your first year, you won't be selected, don't worry about it. But when the lottery is drawn, sure enough, Prim's name is the one selected. And when this happens, Katniss steps forward, the older sister, and says, "I volunteer as tribute." In other words, she says, "I will gladly die for her." We know the feeling, don't we? There are people in our lives that we will gladly die for. My wife, my kids, our families. You have people that you love the same way. We will die for them. And we have children that we're very tempted to adore. Tony Campolo was going on a show with a rabbi, and it was a preacher and a rabbi. This isn't a joke. This is a true story. A preacher and a rabbi, and they were going to talk about family issues. And he thought, "Oh, this is no problem. You know, a preacher can go and talk about family with no problem." But he begins the show, and the rabbi says, "Well, the difference in Judaism and Christianity is that Judaism is pro-family and Christianity is anti-family." Anti-family. Is Christianity anti-family? Well, let's, thinking all about these things, now let's look at the text. And let's hear what Jesus has to say. We'll look at several passages where Jesus is going to say some things about family. In Matthew chapter 10, beginning in verse 34. Matthew 10, verse 34. "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a person's enemy will be those of his own household. For whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Think about those passages and what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying that we have to often go against our family, and that what he is coming to do in his work on this earth is set a son against his father, a daughter against her mother, and even a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Go to another passage. And in this passage, Matthew chapter 12, verses 46 through 50. Let's go to Luke, and then we'll come back to Matthew chapter 12. Let's go to Luke 12, 49 through 53. Luke 12, 49 through 53. "I came to cast fire on the earth, and I would that it were already kindled. I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how great is my distress until it is accomplished.
Do you think that I've come to give peace on earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. For from now on, in one house there will be five divided, three against two and two against three. They will be divided, father against son and son against father, mother against daughter and daughter against mother, and mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. Now in his preaching here, Jesus goes to great problems to set and to describe these various relationships. And Jesus is saying, you think I've come to bring peace? I've come to bring division. I'm going to create strife in your family over me. And that I'm going to be one who people will have to make a choice about. And oftentimes that will cause them to be divided with their own household. Notice Jesus says he's even greatly distressed about what he's doing. You see, we ask the question, is Christianity really always pro-family? Now go back to Matthew chapter 12, 46 through 50. Matthew chapter 12, 46 through 50. Matthew 12, 46 through 50. While he was still speaking to the people, behold, his mother and his brothers stood outside and asking to speak to him. Now, we read this passage a few weeks back when we talked about how Jesus managed time. But think about if you were in a group, say you're at a some kind of work function or social function or school function, and your mom and your brothers came and asked to see you. Now, unless you're a teenager at school, you're probably going to go out there real soon. The teenagers may try to sometime, or at least younger kids even will get into thinking, well, I don't want mom to see me, or I don't want people to know who my mom is. Someone said that their parents drove such an old car, they would make them stop outside way, way from school, and then they would walk in the rest of the way because they didn't want their friends to see them riding in that old car. But most of us, right, unless we've gone through those adolescent years, most of us are going to say, hey, my mom and brother, they take precedent. They take priority over what I'm doing now. But notice what Jesus does. You know the text. Jesus replied to the man who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? Stretching out his hand toward his disciples, he said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Now this text gives us affirmation and encouragement as a disciple of Jesus. Because it says to us, and we like this text says, I'm in Jesus' family. Jesus views me as a brother and a sister. Jesus loves me as a part of his family. And it also tells us, and we talk about this a lot, how it means that we're a family of God, and we've got brethren in the church, and we've got sisters in the church that love us and treat us like family. And that's great, and that's the way we ought to basically apply this passage. But now I want you to think about the passage from a little bit different perspective. How did it sit to Mary and the brothers? I can see Mary being confused by this, like she had many things before, and these things that she treasured in her heart and pondered about. Then, of course, the brothers we know are going to have some, they're not going to believe in Jesus and his divinity and understand his purpose. And you can almost see them thinking, here goes Jesus disrespecting our mom, hurting our mom's feelings, and not respecting us. How do you think his mother and brothers felt? I'm sure it made for some awkward talking the next time they met back around the family table, don't you think? Well, Jesus, why'd you treat us like that? Are you ashamed of us? How come you wouldn't come out and talk to us? We needed you. We were trying to help you. But Jesus said, whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother, my sister, and my mother. How would we respond to what Jesus did if we were his mother or his brothers? And then let's go to another passage, John chapter 19. John chapter 19. In this passage, Jesus is on the cross. And in verses 25 and following, we know the story about how Mary is there at the foot of the cross. And standing by Jesus were his mother, his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." And he said to the disciple, John likely, "Behold your mother." From that hour the disciple took her to his own home.
Now we often maybe observe that Jesus shows a lot of care and concern for his mother, and he does rightly do that.
And even in his pain, you know, when we are going through pain, we tend to get very selfish in our thinking. And Jesus shows us that at this time when he was in tremendous pain, he still was able to focus on the needs and the concern for others. He wasn't even selfish in his pain. But I want you to think about this story once again from the perspective of his mother.
Think about the agony that she was going through, experiencing what was likely an ultimate nightmare, watching her son be murdered so unjustly. Remember all the things that the Bible talks about early on in the passages about his birth and his childhood,
how Mary treasured these things in her heart and pondered these things that he was doing. She stored them up. I bet all those things were bouncing around in her mind.
And she probably was asking or wondering, at least possibly, "Why have you done this to me? Your stubborn insistence on doing things your way is ripping my heart out." And she probably was wondering, "Jesus, why did you have to be like this and make me experience this?" And what's ironic about that is, and she's going to learn this later and really understand it,
is that though he was paining her greatly at that moment, he was really dying for her soul at that moment. And it's through his death and through the pain that he's actually causing her in his death as a mother that he is redeeming her, her sons, and all of humanity.
Now, what do we make out of these stories, and what's the point of all this? I hope that this is the point. We love others best when we love God the most. We love others the best when we love God the most.
And this is what Jesus is saying, I believe, throughout all these passages. And this is very much a struggle for our families and for our culture and for our world. Our world says today, adore children and put children up. And grandparents, it really says grandchildren are the greatest thing ever, right? And our world says today to single people that you really can't be happy unless you find that perfect person, and that perfect person that then you can marry and they'll make you happy. And our world says today that if you're in a miserable marriage, that you're probably not ever going to be happy because it's your spouse's fault and you need to find someone that can make you happy. So just get out of that marriage and find someone that will make you happy. And our world says today all kinds of things about the parent relationship as they get older and various things of that nature about you've got to go on with your life and things. And here's the point I want you to see from Jesus. Jesus is teaching us something that's very countercultural. It is this: God must be first. First over my parents, first over my wife, first over my children. And Jesus says it very plainly. He is going to cause division in our families. That he's going to cause us to often have tension and friction in our families because our families often don't have the same values and morals and discipleship as we do. And that we have to choose Jesus every time. And here's the other important point, is that we really love our spouse, our children, and our parents, and every other relationship the best when we love God the most.
You see, if I take my wife as the center of my life, then I don't love her the best, and I can't be the husband she really needs. If I make my children the center of my admiration, if I adore them to the point of worship almost, and get my hope and my joy and my purpose for my children, then I'm not the kind of father they really need. If I make my parents my highest respect and devotion, then I don't really honor them and treat them best because God isn't first. You see, so what we should do is adore God. We should worship God. And if that means division, if that means friction, if that means tension, so be it. Because we love others best when we love God the most. I want to tell one more story, and then I ask you to make your application to your own life. This story is about a man who grew up in a very atheistic home. His name is John Clayton. I don't agree with everything he has taught, but he's been a great defender for God against atheists in our brotherhood. But his story is one that many people may not have known. He grew up in a very atheistic home. In fact, his parents were militant atheists. And he is convinced that most atheists are that way because they have been spiritually abused in the past. In other words, his father grew up in a Methodist minister's home, and his father was a minister. And he said his father was very emotionally and likely physically abusive on them, and that turned his son strongly against faith and religion. And his mother grew up in a home where the aunt was very religious, kind of the religious figure in the family, and very spiritual. But then she cheated her sister, out of a lot of money. And so they were both very turned off, you might say, at religion. So they were militant atheists, and they raised their children to be militant atheists. And they told their children all along, if you ever become a Christian, you'll be out of our family. And John was very strongly atheistic until he goes to the Indiana University. And while there he meets something that changes many men, a sweet young lady who was a Christian. And this lady began to study with him, and they end up going to the local preacher, whose name was Ray Muncy at the time, who went on to teach at Harding University. And they studied the Bible with him, and slowly John began to soften toward Christianity. But the preacher even said that when he came down the aisle that Sunday evening to be baptized, he said he still did not know if he was going to punch him or ask to be baptized when he was coming down that aisle, because the studies had been so contentious. And the man had such hard feelings at first against Christianity. But John was immersed into Christ, became a child of God, and went on to do great things in teaching for God. His family disowned him. He had nothing to do with his family for years, and he loved his family. His dad would die, and his brothers didn't have anything to do with him. And his mom got in poor health, got very feeble, so she couldn't take care of herself and needed someone to care for them. John and his wife took her in to their home. She was still very much an atheist. One time, while he was physically changing her diaper, she asked him, she said, John, why are you doing this? She said, your brothers, they would not do this. He said, Mom, the difference in me and my brothers is that I am a Christian. And she said, John, I don't want to be an atheist any longer. And she became a Christian too. We love others best when we love God the most. Your spouse, your children, your parents are to be loved, but they come in second behind God. You love God the most, and you'll love others the best. If you need to respond, come as together we stand and sing.